Hello and welcome to the Four Press Podcast presented by GolfWeek.com. I'm your host, David Dusek, and in this episode, my guest is Whoop founder and CEO Will Ahmed. His company's product has become extremely popular with professional golfers and elite golfers around the world, and in this podcast, you're going to find out why. We talk at length about how stars like Rory McIlroy are changing their training and lifestyles to improve their performance, and we discuss the value of sleep and rest. We also talk about what his company is doing during the coronavirus pandemic that might show that someone is getting sick, possibly with the COVID-19 virus. Unfortunately, there's a couple of crackles in the first few minutes of the podcast due to Skype, but I figured out how to fix it, and the sound quality is pretty good for the vast majority of the show. I hope you like it. Enjoy. Get stronger, hit longer, and end pain with Golf Forever. Created by Justin Leonard and co-author of the Younger Next Year Back book, Dr. Jeremy James, Golf Forever is the take anywhere online golf fitness program that helps you build a body primed for golf. It's simple, safe, and it works. At home, in the gym, on the golf course, Golf Forever's easy to follow exercises, warm-up routines, and course management videos will help you play your best pain-free. Sign up today at golfforever.com and use promo code GOLFWEEK for a free 14-day trial. Okay, so now with my kids downstairs, hopefully doing their distance learning thing at school, I feel like I'm about to be somewhat taken to school here in this episode of the Four Press Podcast. Following in a very famous tradition established by some Harvard dropouts like Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg, Will Ahmed has basically founded up a tech startup, I believe about 8 years ago. Even though he did, if I'm not mistaken, Will, graduate from Harvard. You did get a degree?
I did get a degree. Yeah.
Mazel tov.
One of my partners actually dropped out, so he's more of the Zuckerberg in this.
Well, okay,
or the Gates.
So you get to be the good guy, and you know, when the movie gets made, it'll all be good. Whoop is a Boston-based company that is one of the most interesting startups and one of the most interesting tech stories I think that's going on about there. I wrote about it for Golf Week magazine and GolfWeek.com. If you want to read that story, it's pinned to the top of my Twitter page right now, which you can read at @GolfWeek_Dusek. Will Ahmed, welcome to the Four Press Podcast. And I got to start. Have you ever been the guest on a golf podcast before?
I have actually been on a couple golf podcasts because we've been growing a lot in the golf world, and it seems to be one of the sports that we've just exploded in organically.
Did you anticipate that coming, or did you think that maybe the other sports that I think, I'm assuming, and we'll get into this a little bit, that you would have been a natural fit for where you were going to land? Is golf surprising to you?
Well, our mission at Whoop is to unlock human performance. So high-performing individuals definitely play golf, and professional golfers, I think, have an unbelievable mental performance, along with having, obviously, phenomenal physical performance. So it hasn't surprised me that we've grown in golf. I think what surprised me is how fast it happened. And to frame this for our audience, I would say conservatively between 20 and 25 of the top 30 players in the world wear Whoop.
Yeah, and I can attest to the fact that really, I think now that a lot of us, hopefully everybody is taking very good care of social distancing and is doing what they need to do to keep themselves and everybody that they love and around them safe, Peloton seems to be sort of the piece of technology du jour for people who can afford to get into that. Starting the middle of last summer, really around like May, June, and certainly into July of 2019, I saw more and more professional golfers, elite amateur golfers, start wearing these bracelets on their wrists. And I kind of knew from CrossFit what that was. Scott Stallings and I have talked about it a few times, and he is, as many of my listeners know, is probably the fittest guy out there, if not one of the fittest guys out there, and has been since he did a huge lifestyle transformation about almost 4 years ago now. And he has been wearing a Whoop bracelet for, I'd say, at least 3 years. You might know that a little bit more because I know that you've talked about it.
Scott Stallings is almost definitely one of the fittest guys on tour. Actually, I was with Rory not that long ago, and Rory called him the fittest guy on tour.
He's an animal.
Pretty fit himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Scott was on it for a few years, and Scott McCarron was also on it for a few years. Scott McCarron having a ton of success on the senior tour. And And then I believe around May of last year, so May of 2019, June, right around then, Rory wins the RBC.
Correct.
And he's wearing a Whoop strap. And that got a lot of people's attention. And then Justin Thomas started wearing Whoop, and he won a tournament like a couple weekends later. And so to frame this again, and we're not taking credit for this, but just to frame it for the audience, I think it was something like 16 or 17 of the last 22 PGA Tour events were won by someone wearing a Whoop strap on the on the final green.
So I started taking notice that this was really growing. And golf is a copycat sport. If somebody gets a piece of equipment, if somebody starts doing a drill, if there's a hot coach, then that becomes something that everybody wants to emulate. And when Rory McIlroy missed the cut in Northern Ireland at the British Open last year and was obviously heartbroken, he put in a tremendous performance, but then turns around the very next week and wins the Canadian Open. And as you mentioned, JT wins and a couple other fantastic performances from Rory. And guys are like, well, what is that all about? And they start asking and they start whispering. And before you know it, like at the beginning of March, I'm there at Bay Hill and I see Danny Lee is wearing one. I see, you know, all these different guys are walking around and
the whole U.S. President's Cup team was wearing it.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's sort of got this thing on. And what's interesting is that guys are just festooned with logos all over the place, whether it's a swoosh or three stripes or whatever kind of stuff, little alligators and all those different companies that we all know. Your product, when people see it on television, is something that is, by and large, like you have to know what that is. There is not some big screaming logo. Explain for people who at this point may not be aware and are like, what the hell are these guys talking about? What is a Whoop strap and how does it work?
Yeah, so what Whoop measures is effectively your body's strain and its recovery and how well you're sleeping. So it summarizes the world in terms of strain and recovery and sleep. And we have a platform that includes hardware and software and analytics. So the hardware is, to your point, this small wrist-worn sensor. It's very unobtrusive. It comes in all sorts of different band colors. You can swap those bands in and out. It's really lightweight. It doesn't have a screen on it. It doesn't have a speakerphone in it. It's not going to make noise at you. It's not going to send you push notifications. But it's constantly collecting data in the background. And it collects about 1,000 to 10,000 times as much data as like an Apple Watch or a Fitbit. So we're really, really, really good at collecting health data. And we do that really accurately. And in fact, we were just shown to be the most accurate wearable on the market by third-party validation. So super accurate, very focused on health data, and then a big focus on strain and recovery and sleep. So the insight that I had in starting Whoop was that, in fact, it wasn't just what was happening during exercise that was important. It was understanding how your body was recovering and everything else in your life that was affecting your body before the performance or the exercise even takes place. I was an athlete myself. I was someone who used to overtrain. So I was interested in how you prevent overtraining. Now, if you think about why are golfers obsessed with Whoop, a lot of it comes back to the fact that they actually live very stressful lifestyles. I think there's this sort of misperception that because they're playing a sport
that looks like casual. Golf,
because it's a casual sport and because it doesn't have the same sweat and other aspects of Whoop started with professional basketball players and Olympic swimmers, and LeBron James and Michael Phelps were two of our first 100 users. So we started in that super alpha cardiovascular world.
Yep.
But the thing about golf that people really underestimate, and even golfers themselves underestimate, is the amount of stress that they're putting on their bodies. These are guys that'll spend, 8, 10, 12 hours practicing in a day, right? These are guys that'll be under enormous mental stress over the course of a weekend. These are guys that are traveling all the time from time zone to time zone to time zone. And so what Whoop does is it helps them understand, how are all these different factors in my life affecting my body, and what can I do to have an optimal recovery?
Yep.
The guys who are hooked on Whoop have realized that when they have a higher recovery on Whoop, so we give you this score from 0 to 100%, red, yellow, green, how prepared is your body to perform? And they've found that if they have a green recovery, performance is easier. It's easier for them to perform. Mm-hmm. And so that's a big phenomenon. And then the question becomes, well, if I know that if I have a higher recovery, I perform better, what are all the different things I can do in my life to improve recovery? Having a high recovery becomes an outcome in itself. Mm-hmm. I just want to do everything I can to have a high recovery. Okay, well, I'm going to introduce new travel habits. I'm not going to have that extra glass of wine before bed. I'm going to introduce magnesium or melatonin or a sleep mask or a colder room or ice cold showers or mm-hmm. meditation or less screen time. Like, there are so many different behaviors that actually affect your body. And you can really only manage these things if you measure them. And so Whoop is really, really good at helping you measure all those different behaviors.
So I just want you guys to know that you have ruined caffeine for me. I'm pretty good on the vice category. Recreational drug use, no. You know, I'm 49 years old. I'd like to think that I've got certain levels of common sense. I'm not going to go like dirt bike riding and try and jump the Grand Canyon. Like we've pretty much toned down that kind of stuff. Drinking is in moderation at the most. I've never been a big partier. That's not something. And now that I've got two kids, I don't have time for any of that stuff. So those things. Coffee was like my one vice. Coffee was my one thing that I was like, you know what? If you actually have too much of it and you try and compete in the Olympics, you get striked on it because caffeine is seen as performance enhancing. And so there's different things I got. That was the one vice that I had. And I noticed when I tried out for the story in golfweek.com, different things and trying adjusting different lifestyles and different habits. Caffeine was one where if I drank coffee or had a significant hit of caffeine, which can come in so many different places that a lot of people don't even realize, after about 12 or 1 o'clock, it affected my recovery the next day. There was just no denying it. I wanted to deny it, but the numbers were what the numbers were. And it was interesting for me, a little bit of alcohol wasn't a big deal. But in a conversation that I had with Rory McIlroy, one of the things that he shared with me was that he will notice a change in his recovery for the number of days as he has the number of drinks of alcohol. So one glass of wine will affect him for one day. Okay.
Yeah, really interesting.
Two glasses is a two-day thing. And so I'm like, well, so if you win the Ryder Cup, you're what, not worth a damn for the next month and a half? I mean, like, I can only imagine how long it goes. What are some of the things that you have heard along those lines? What are some of the lifestyle change? Because you spoke about it broadly from specific athletes that you can share with my audience, that things that certain guys have done or certain women have done to modify their behaviors or their lifestyle patterns to improve their performance.
Yeah. I mean, alcohol is a huge one. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Rory. I just interviewed him recently for the Whoop podcast. We're actually going to be releasing that shortly. So if mm-hmm. people want to listen to that, that's probably going to be coming out Masters week, yep. Or what would have been Masters week, yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And so that Rory talks a lot about how Whoop has changed his behavior, changed his lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I would say in general, alcohol consumption negatively affects recovery. That's a fairly obvious one.
Shocker.
caffeine later in the day, it depends on the person. Mm-hmm. Some people metabolize caffeine quickly. Some do it slowly. Depending on that, it may or may not affect your sleep that night. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of changes made to bedtime routines after time on Whoop. Mm-hmm. So screen use being a big one. If you're looking at your cell phone up until the second before you go to bed, that's emitting blue light. Blue light stimulates your brains and can make it harder for you to get REM sleep. REM sleep is a very important period of time while you're sleeping mm-hmm. where your mind is repairing itself. In general, you want to try to get as much REM sleep and as much slow wave sleep as possible. For people listening to this who like to exercise, you don't actually get stronger exercising. You get stronger recovering from exercise. And in fact, slow wave sleep is when you produce 95% of your human growth hormone, and that is when your body's repairing itself. Mm-hmm. So if you get 30 minutes of slow wave sleep versus 2.5 hours of slow wave sleep, that's going to have a profoundly different effect on your body's repairing and recovering and just the rate at which you're actually adding fitness gains.
So explain to people who may not be sort of really aware, what are the different types of sleep that you're talking about, and how does Whoop sort of measure and put people into different categories or break down the sleep that you might have from, say, like 10:30 at night until 6 in the morning? How does it differentiate different types?
It's a great question. So if you ask someone who doesn't use Whoop, who doesn't measure their sleep, how much sleep did you get last night? The person is probably going to do math that looks something like this. I went to bed at 11 p.m. and I woke up at 7 a.m. So I got 8 hours of sleep, right? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, all that means is you spent 8 hours in bed. Mm-hmm. So what Whoop is going to do is it's going to look at that 8 hours you spent in bed and tell you actually how much sleep you got. Within that 8 hours, it took you time to fall asleep. That's called sleep latency. How long does it take you to fall asleep? Then there's different stages of sleep. There's the period that you're awake, period that you're in light sleep, period that you're in slow wave sleep, and period that you're in REM sleep. Slow wave sleep and REM sleep are worth a lot more than light and awake. I mean, awake's worth mm-hmm. nothing. Light's worth practically nothing. Mm-hmm. Slow wave and REM are worth everything. That's your restorative sleep. So let's go back to that person who thinks they got 8 hours of sleep. They very well may have taken them 30 minutes to fall asleep. So now we're at 7.5 hours. And then within that, they may have spent 5 hours of it, 6 hours of it in light sleep or in disturbances. So we also measure disturbances, which is where you're tossing and turning and you effectively go through these 30 to 60 second periods of unconsciously being awake.
Hmm.
So over the course of 7.5 hours of trying to sleep, maybe this person has only gotten about an hour of restorative sleep. And by the way, the dude who only spent 6 hours in bed, who got 3 hours of restorative sleep, is going to kick your ass tomorrow.
And that was the thing that I learned, is that the quantity is great, but it's the quality of the quantity that really ends up being such a critical thing. Because I noticed many times when I would go to bed, for example, at 11:30 or 12, wake up at 6, and I would be in the green, being totally shocked that was going to happen. And other times, in bed, by nature, I am an early to bed, early to rise person. I like waking up at around 5 or 5:30. I'm very productive. I can get exercise. If I need to work, if I need to bang out a column, nobody's emailing me at 5:15 in the morning. No one's calling me at 5:15 in the morning. And that's something I've learned from being around a lot of athletes. I know Ricky Fowler, for example, who has also worn Whoop. I'm not sure, like I started seeing him with a bracelet this year at Kapalua. He's a really early riser, and he and his wife go out paddleboarding a lot of times as the sun is rising in Florida. And I just started ingraining that. It's the quality of the sleep that really just made it was so clear. Rather than going to bed at, you know, for me, like 10 o'clock and waking up at 7, if it was a lousy night's sleep, or if I was in what Whoop was measuring as light, then I wouldn't score as high. I might be in yellow simply because I had so much light that it seemed the system seemed to like that. But it was telling me constantly, like, that's you weren't where you needed to be.
I think that's right. And, you know, it allows individuals to do a lot of self-experimentation, right? Because first you realize, what's your baseline?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, we've worked with professional athletes that spend 9 hours in bed and get 30 minutes of restorative sleep, or they're averaging 4 hours of sleep a night. Mm-hmm. You know, that person doesn't need to spend more time at the range or spend more time fielding ground balls. That person needs to figure out how to sleep because they're playing drunk. Literally, it's the equivalent of playing drunk. So, you know, there's so much gains you can have in your life. Forget being a professional athlete. Anyone out there who wants to improve in their daily lives, you can make enormous gains by just tweaking a few things. You'd be blown away by how small the adjustments are in your life and the enormous magnitude that it'll have on your performance, your happiness, your stress levels. Dialing in your sleep makes everything better.
So do athletes or trainers ever fight? I would imagine not the trainers, but I would imagine that there could be pushback early on from athletes who are unaware that they are overtraining or are resistant, because there has been an overriding philosophy, I think, throughout sport, and some sports are more specific about this than others, that you have to train harder. You have to put in the hours, you know, the proverbial 10,000 hours for mastery that Malcolm Gladwell has written about and I think has really become ingrained, that you got to outwork your competition. Whereas the ideas that you're espousing and are putting forward is that, yeah, work is important, but equally important is the willingness to recover, the acceptance that you will not be at your best, certainly in competition, if you do not step away from the work and allow your body to recover the way that it needs to. I would imagine some guys and some women have a lot of trouble accepting that.
Well, look, I think you have to work insanely hard to be a big success at anything. And certainly we're talking about golfers right now who are competing to be, you know, whether they're 0.00001 or 0.00002% in the world, yeah, right, in terms of how good they are. So every little inch makes a difference. I'm not suggesting that people need to work less hard. I'm suggesting they need to think very carefully about what they're focusing their attention on. Mm-hmm. You know, you listen to Rory McIlroy talk about his lifestyle now. He is spending so much time and putting in so much work on trying to understand everything else about his body and his lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right. We worked with LeBron James at a time when he was trying crazy diets. He was spending millions of dollars a year on his body. He was doing all kinds of recovery therapies. That's not a guy who's not working hard, right? These aren't guys that aren't working hard. Mm-hmm. They're just pointing it in a slightly different angle, right? The idea that working hard is just running court sprints or just hitting balls at the range, mm-hmm, is a very simple-minded point of view.
It's essentially trying to make them more efficient, right? Is trying to figure out what is the most efficient way to progress,
yes,
in your, yes, athletic endeavors, in your personal endeavors, and basically in your overall health and well-being.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're fine-tuning an engine and you got to do oil changes, right? Yeah. You can't just rev the engine the whole time. So that's where we've seen athletes make unbelievable breakthroughs. And, you know, some of them, it's been with diet. Some of them it's been with meditation. Some of them it's been with sleep routines. Some of them it's literally been with exercising less. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of guys are inclined to overdo it. Because in part, that's what it took to get there, right? And sometimes what it takes to be the top 100 in the world or the best executive in your firm isn't what's going to make you number one in the world or CEO, right? You got to keep figuring out how you're going to level up. And so it's looking at things differently. And I think that's what Whoop can help people do.
So Tiger Woods was famous for, I forget even when he had the quote, it was early in his career, talking about, he was going through some swing changes and people were like, why are you tinkering with this? You just came off of, again, like the 2000, 2001 Tiger Woods seasons are thought to be almost the gold standard of golf, that no one's ever played the game at that level before. He blows away the competition at Pebble Beach, blows him away at the British Open at St. Andrews, and has reached a number one, and it's got just a commanding presence around. And yet it wasn't too much later that he started going through swing changes and going through coaching changes and went through that through the 2000s. And the premise was, I always want to be getting better, that my competition is trying to improve. And if I stay where I am in terms of my performance and what I can do with a golf ball on the golf course, then they are getting closer to me. I'm always looking to try and improve. When I talk with Rory at Bay Hill, he told me that he attained number one in the world and won a major championship early in his career, despite the fact, looking back, I don't know, he was overtraining. That he had, yeah, bought into the Tiger philosophy of like, I've got to work every day. And I remember going when we were at Doral 1 year, I think it was 2011, maybe 2012. And he was just sort of beginning his really serious fitness, you know, sort of journey, if you will. It's 5 o'clock in the morning and I've got to be there for work at the golf course. So I'm waking up, going to go for like a 45-minute bike ride, and that's going to be my day. He was already there in the gym, was playing that afternoon, and he's doing rep after rep of pull-ups, sit-ups, all types of weights. And I'm like, this is a playing day for this guy. He's got to compete, and he's up here now. I'm like, when did he go to bed? Even just forgetting about this stuff, I'm like, most normal people would not like to get up in the fours. When we travel for work, I always consider it a blessing if I'm getting up in the fives or the sixes. Every once in a while, I've got to get up in the fours. It sucks. And to have him tell me, like, now I don't do that. you know what? I don't overtrain. I am not taking that philosophy. I'm taking other philosophies that I have learned based on data and analytics. To me, it would be something also that would be reinforcing good habits, but is also going to be reassuring to players. Athletes love things that are definites, or that they believe are definites, truths and truisms. And when they see numbers, they believe in numbers. They believe in their stats, because there's a disconnect between that. And when the stats say good things, they like good things. Is how often do you still see, and I guess I'm coming back to a little bit of a question I just asked you, but that these things reveal things to athletes that they might have known but didn't want to believe, or didn't really take as seriously as with a little self-experimentation they learn maybe they should have taken seriously?
Look, I think we're going to look back on this moment in time that athletes weren't measuring sleep and recovery as like this insane moment in sports. I think we'll liken it to, you know, baseball players smoking in the dugout. Like, it'll just seem that insane.
Yep.
Truly. Because we've worked with professional athletes that, I'm not kidding, are like the 32nd best person at their position, mm-hmm. and in the world, and they can't sleep. I mean, it's so fundamental. It's a third of your life. And by the way, for an athletic performance, it is beyond a necessity.
Yeah.
So sleep, I think, is one of the biggest unlocks for people listening to this. And I don't care if you're a professional, an amateur, or you're just trying to do a great job in your daily life. There's unquestionably ways that you can improve your sleep, because the only way to manage it is to measure it. And once you start measuring it, you can make tweaks and figure out, what are all the things I could do to dial it in?
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the company itself. I want to transition now into some other things that are going to be a little bit more timely. Whoop, as I mentioned, is based in Boston. You guys are obviously at this point working, I'm assuming, remotely. How are you as a startup company handling basically what the entire world is being thrown right now?
Well, a few things. I mean, first of all, we're working from home. We're managing remotely. You know, we do build hardware, so we've overcome some of those challenges. Our supply chain's up and running, and everything from that standpoint's good.
Good.
I think the most important thing for our audience, and when I say our audience, I mean the Whoop members who, mm-hmm. who use our product every day, is we've been actually launching deep into COVID-19 research.
Yeah.
So we were the first consumer product to add COVID-19 tracking in our app. So starting in early March, you could literally label whether or not you have COVID-19 or tested positive for it. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten hundreds of responses to that. And we've had hundreds of individual Whoop members volunteer their data for research purposes around COVID-19. And the results, quite frankly, are pretty, pretty fascinating. And, you know, our goal is to figure out, what does it look like physiologically before, during, and after COVID-19? And, you know, share that information back with the Whoop community so they might be able to recognize something in their Whoop data, and share that back with society at large so we can figure out what the hell this thing looks like and beat it.
So are you able to predict or show somebody, based on the analytics that Whoop can provide, that they may be sick or they may have in fact contracted COVID-19?
We may be able to predict it. That's what we're working on right now. All the individuals who have tested positive on Whoop have a few very common elements to them. Mm-hmm. One, and I'll frame it this way, two of which seem to be somewhat specific to COVID-19, and two of which seem to be general signs that your body's run down.
Okay.
So we'll start backwards.
Yeah.
If you have a higher resting heart rate and a lower heart rate variability, those are two of the things that Whoop measures while you're sleeping.
Yep.
Those always coincide with you being sick. The thing is, you could have the flu, you could have a cold, you could be hungover.
There's lots of illnesses, right? Sure.
There's a lot of things that may, your body could be overtrained, right? We just talked about overtraining. Mm-hmm. So those tend to be signs that your body's run down in a lot of different contexts, let alone COVID-19. What we've seen for everyone who has COVID-19 is two other things. One is an inability to exercise at a typical level that they're used to. And mind you, we're talking about things that occur before symptoms.
Okay, so right? so pre-symptomatic, someone has a certain level of fitness. They go on a run, they go on a bike ride, they do whatever they're going to do. They are not able to achieve the strain levels that they would have anticipated.
They can't complete it. The second piece, which we believe is the smoking gun, is respiratory rate. So everyone has what's called a respiratory rate while they're sleeping. Mm-hmm. And that is effectively breaths per minute. So how many breaths per minute do you take while you're sleeping? Mm-hmm. And if you were to look at your data on Whoop over the last year, you would see practically no variations in your respiratory rate. It's just a constant thing. And by the way, it varies from like 8 is really low, 20 is a little high, like in terms of breaths per minute while you're sleeping. So okay. It's a fairly narrow window, right? Mm-hmm. 8 to 20 breaths per minute. What we've seen for everyone so far of the data that we've looked at is the respiratory rate is elevated 2 days, 3 days before someone shows symptoms. And there's logic for this as well. COVID-19 is a lower respiratory infection. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense that your respiratory rate as a result would be elevated. Whereas say with the flu, common cold, some of the other things that we talked about, that those wouldn't affect your respiratory rate. So we're pretty excited about that. We're doing a ton of research right now. We've partnered with a couple leading research institutions to look at this data, help us make sense of it, and we're going to publish our findings. And I want to be clear, like for people listening, Whoop is not a medical device.
Yep.
The data that I'm describing, has been validated by third parties to show that what we measure is super accurate, mm-hmm. and we believe it may be predictive of things like COVID-19.
But so I think it's a tremendous opportunity. Yeah. I mean, like you've got this enormous baseline group that is wanting, they're analytically minded to begin with. I would imagine that should someone become COVID-19 positive, I would imagine the percentage, which would still be small, of people who still would want to share that data to help out. I just think that the community that you've tried to nurture and create is that kind of mindset, that they would volunteer this kind of data, which gives Whoop an opportunity to play actually an outsized role. How many people are in your company total?
Employees?
Yeah.
About 150 employees.
So 150 employees in this situation where we've got Ford Motor Company that's being, you know, trying to go out and make masks. All these different companies are trying to make respirators. And here's a company that may, and again, as Will just said, you know, they are not doctors. This is not a medical device, but it's a highly accurate tracking system. If there is a way to at least tell people or give people a heads up before they become symptomatic that you may be ill, you might be ill with any number of different things, but you're potentially ill. It's something that could be really game changing. I mean, it's an opportunity to really be game changing and potentially a terrible situation. So to me, hats off to you guys for collecting the data. Whatever you can find out, I will look forward to reading and learning about. In some ways, I would imagine for athletes and people who have this, it's again reassuring because they're going to wake up in the morning, hop onto their smartphone or whatever their device is going to be. And if they see that the numbers are consistent, nothing is guaranteed, but that is one thing that they can then look at and say like, yeah, you know what? Like I'm doing okay. I think for another day, I'm going to continue to practice safe habits. But right now, one of the things that your device that feeds a lot into the device is anxiety. And I want to ask you as somebody who works around that concept a lot, how the hell is somebody not supposed to have high anxiety right now? There is literally a global pandemic that's affecting the way that we live. The economy is going to hell. A lot of people are unemployed, are laid off, furloughed, like, well, all these different things. I have this running joke with my friends. Like you literally instinctively answer the phone. Hey, how you doing? I'm like, shitty. How do you think I'm doing? I'm like, everything is nuts. I mean, thankfully my family and I were healthy. it's easy for us to self-quarantine and keep ourselves safe, but like things are awful. How much does overall anxiety feed into Strain and Whoop? And what have you learned from talking to people? Because I know in your podcast, you've talked to a lot of experts in a lot of different fields. How do you manage strain so that it doesn't adversely affect your nervous system and your immune system?
Well, it's a good point. I mean, anxiety is a real thing. Stress is a real thing. And by the way, it shows up in your Whoop data. So if you get in, let alone a global pandemic for a second, if you get in a fight with your partner before bed, or mm-hmm. you read the wrong email before bed, or you're thinking about some big presentation tomorrow, or even an athletic event, right? That psychological stress can affect the way you sleep. And independent from how perfectly you're training or all your other behaviors, that stress can make you not get REM sleep, not get slow wave sleep, not recover properly, not have a high recovery the next day. So it's something that people should pay very close attention to. And there's a lot of self-help around how can you decrease your own anxiety, your own stress. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in meditation. I've been practicing it for 6 years now. I never would have been able to build this business without learning how to meditate. So that's one thing I highly recommend. Exercise is another thing I highly recommend, because that's, studies have shown that exercising decreases anxiety levels, mm-hmm. decreases stress. I think you also want to be mindful of how different diets, different substances can amplify or not stress. Mm-hmm. You know, drinking coffee may increase your stress levels. Drinking tea may decrease them. Who knows? I mean, these are things that often can be quite personal as well. Mm-hmm. So, again, I keep coming back to, you can only manage what you measure. And so if you think anxiety is something that's affecting you, start measuring it. Whoop does a good job of measuring it. You can track it in our journal. We have this Whoop journal that allows you to track 40 or 50 different behaviors, lifestyle choices, you name it. And then you can figure out what are all the different ways I can either decrease my stress or live with it.
So I guess we'll sort of go out on this one. What is your goal for your company and the product Whoop, say over the rest of 2020? And then where do you guys want to be? What do you sort of envision 3 to 5 years from now your company to be like? And what are you going to try and offer people?
Well, our mission at Whoop is really to unlock human performance. So we want to stay true to that mission in everything that we do. I think our goal for 2020 right now is to see how much research we can do and give back to the medical community, give back to our Whoop members around COVID-19, because that's the global pandemic. That's the thing that every human right now is fighting together, hopefully to solve and to mm-hmm. figure out. So everything we can do to beat that bastard, let's do it. I think the bigger picture for Whoop is being an authority around all things performance, you know, in the years to come. We want consumers, when they have a question about their individual performance, their team performance, whether it be cognitive, whether it be physical, we want them to say, okay, well, I need to go to Whoop to try to help answer that question for myself. And so for us, it's providing as much data, as much feedback, as many insights as possible to our members and the community at large around performance.
So I almost quit my job. This is going back now a little over 20 years, and went back to school to study exercise physiology and kinesiology. I was,
oh wow.
I played tennis. So you were the number one squash player at Harvard and the captain of the team, if I read your bio correctly. I was the number one tennis player at St. Lawrence University and the captain of our team up there. And I wore, this is now in the early 90s, dating myself. I'm a little ahead of you out there. But I was the only guy on the team who was wearing a heart rate monitor during practices. And I just needed to know, because I wasn't good enough to beat the most elite guys back in the old ECAC. I needed every little edge I could get. And I learned to match heart rate with performance and breathing patterns. And
yeah, totally.
When I was ready to start a point, I could tell by my heart rate, which is basically my breathing rate. I matched the two up. When I should start and when I might need to drop a tennis ball and give myself 5 to 7 seconds within the rules. And to be able to try and dictate pace of a match to my advantage rather than being sped up. And that always stuck with me. My coaches were really into that early on. And it's something that fascinated me. If people are into this kind of stuff, David Epstein, who's a good friend of mine, wrote the book that I wished I had written called The Sports Gene. And I can't recommend that book enough if you like to dork out on some of this stuff with human performance and exercise physiology and the differences that every one of us have. It's a magnificent read. I was going to go back into this. So for you to have a foot in the two worlds that I love most, which is human performance and sport, which are obviously interrelated, but the science behind human performance to me is amazing. It wasn't the right time in my life to make that change. I didn't. I don't regret it. But for me to have you on the show and to be able to dork out a little bit about some of these things, especially right now at this time in all of our histories, was a real treat. So, Will, thank you very much for coming on the Forward Press.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.